back together again. You and I chatting it up Thursday style, March 5th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today, where I looked at the first version of a bill from the state capitol that would lay out far more specific rules and regulations for thousands of homeschool students in Connecticut, and no surprise that bill is already generating a lot of opposition. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso and former Republican State Senate Leader John McKinney dropped by weighing in on recent line item vetoes from Governor Ned Lamont.
All right, I'm going to say this, and I want people I direct it to take it easy here. Don't get all snippy with me. I'm saying this as a person who I think kind of understands the political process here and the thinking of people in Hartford, and I talk to these people all the time, and I talk to people who talk to people who talk to those people. I know a lot of people are a little nervous about what might happen with homeschooling in the state. I get it. I understand it. There are thousands of people who homeschool their kids. God bless you. God bless them and everybody. I don't know if I would have had the patience to do that with my son. Thank God he's doing very well now. Having said that, calm down. Relax. Calm down. Relax. Take it easy. And the more and more I read online, listen to stuff on this and other radio stations, watch stuff on TV, read all my political junkie stuff, I'm starting to get the feeling here that some, but not all, people who either advocate for or are members of the homeschooling community, I think are overreacting here just a bit. Now, as we get into this, I'll give you my caveats here. I'm not talking about curriculum or curricula, however you want to say it. I forget what the plural is. I am 100% with you folks, you guys and gals, who don't want the state coming in and bigfooting what you teach your sons or daughters homeschooling. And there is a new bill out there. There are some aspects of that bill that apply to curricula, but I'm not talking about that right now. We're talking about notification requirements. And earlier this week, there was a rather testy and heated and emotional public hearing, I believe, up at the state capitol. We talked about it on the air here a little bit. And basically, there and listen, the people that want to tighten the requirements for at least notifying the state and state officials when you are homeschooling a child, they're right. We have very loose, if not completely inadequate laws and inadequate procedures for just telling state officials that, hey, I'm pulling my kid out of school and I'm going to homeschool them. Now, I don't really see anything wrong with that. Now, there are a couple of layers here that we have to talk about. But I'd love to hear this afternoon from you folks who used to homeschool, want to homeschool, or in the process of homeschooling, whatever children, sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, other folks that you are in charge of, you have purvey over. Because I want to get your thoughts on this, because I think this is one of these situations. And again, I have nothing at all against people who homeschool their kids. God bless each and every one of you. But you got to pick your battles here. And there are enough progressives and enough Democrats in the state House and state Senate with veto-proof majorities here that if they wanted to, they legislatively could pretty much shut down homeschooling in this state if they want to. I don't think you want that. But you've got to tread lightly here. Interesting story by Natasha Sokoloff in the Connecticut Insider. Some families are pushing back on a proposed homeschooling bill. Now, I've read the new bill. It does have a lot of different, it's numerous pages, 500-600 lines. We'll get to that in the coming days. I have somebody flipping through that bill right now. She already sent me parts of it that may upset parents, homeschoolers, whatever. But there's a section in that bill on notification requirements that, to me, now maybe somebody wants to give me another perspective on that, but to me, I read that bill about homeschooling and notification requirements, and I say, this kind of makes sense insofar as we're still peeling back the layers, if you will, of this young man, now what, in his early 30s, who says he was, who claims allegedly his stepmother imprisoned him basically at a home in Waterbury for years. We have the Mimi Torres case there. So the anti-homeschooling people, of which there are some out there, don't play around and think there aren't those out there. They've got ammunition now. And they're suggesting things to see if the homeschooling crowd will, and homeschooling advocates will say, these are okay, these make sense. So what are those things? Now, we're not talking about curriculum here, but we're going to start on this momentarily. We'll do the break here, we'll come back. Here's our beginning question for the day today. And I want you to give this some thought. I don't think we think that there are rumbling hordes coming over the hill to disembowel everybody who homeschools a child. However, having said that, you can't say no to everything. You can't. Because the anti-homeschooling crowd, of which there are a lot from the teachers and the teachers' unions all the way through the General Assembly, who fear that homeschoolers end up, robbing the school system of funding, they are there waiting for too many people to be too obstinate on this. So we start with this, and it's a simple question. I'll get into some of the nitty-gritty of the details coming up. But we start with this on a Thursday. Should Connecticut have tighter requirements and regulations on informing state officials when a child begins homeschooling? Again, not necessarily talking about curriculum here yet. I'm sure that'll become part of it. What is required to be taught of kids or minors who are being schooled at home? But does anybody out there have a problem with telling the school system, who will then tell the Department of Education, who may then check to see to make sure you're not in trouble with DCF? Does anybody have a problem with that? I don't see how you could. Yeah, hey, how are you? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC here on a Thursday, Connecticut Today. So I tried for about 10 minutes to paw my way through this big homeschooling bill. All these things colliding in my fat head here. This homeschooling bill that dropped late yesterday, somebody sent it to me, and I got about 5 pages in. I said, nah, you know who I'm going to have do this for me. So I have some bullet points we'll go over later, but I'm warning people on this, and I'm saying it out of all the love in my heart for people who homeschool. And it's not easy. I ain't telling you it's easy. I could never do it. Now, I know people that have done it, that continue to do it, and they love it. They say being my sons or daughters or grandsons or granddaughters, teachers, whatever, it's really good. They say it's hard sometimes. It's hard to go and keep asking yourself, is my kid or kids, are they missing out on the socialization of school? They get that. They understand that. But utmost respect for what they do. But I'm telling you, you cannot be paranoid about this. Only because, what did you think was going to happen? The Mimi Torres case, that poor girl from New Britain, the deviants in her family there, kept saying, oh, she's being homeschooled, but they could never find her. And this allegation of 20 years of captivity in Waterbury, by this young man who's now 32 or 33. We still haven't heard from him directly. His name is S. I imagine he'll address the media at some time or another. But having said that, there are a couple of things here in this bill that you should know about. Now, I don't think, now I'm giving this kind of a superficial reading here. I don't think this is crazy. And understand that the anti-homeschooling folks, the folks who, through their own myopic vision, only think that public education is the only way to go, they've got the ammunition. You homeschoolers don't for the time being. They can say, look at that little girl in New Britain, or look at that young man now recovering in Waterbury. And they were all hidden. They were both hidden under the guise of homeschooling. We can't have this happen again. So what are they proposing? Now, again, this is a big, big, big bill. There's, I think, 600 or 700 lines in this bill. I was looking at it beforehand. These are only a few things. Now, could there be rotten things in this bill? Of course there could be. I fully expect there is, or are, or will be. World without end, amen. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. See you next Sunday. Under the proposed bill, okay, so you tell me if this is nuts, because I don't think it is. Under the proposed bill, local school districts would be required to know, so your local school district, your town or city school district, would be required to tell the Connecticut Education Commissioner and DCF when a student is withdrawn from a school district. In other words, the parent or whatever, they go to the office and say, hey, I'm pulling the kid out. Okay. Whether that be for homeschooling or they're going to a private school or they're moving towns. That's it. Hey, we're pulling Mary out in December. Why is that? Well, we have the money now. We're going to send her to a private school. Oh, congratulations. That's great. Hope she does well. Keep in touch. See you later. Or we're moving. My husband got transferred, and he starts January 1 over here. So under this bill, under this homeschooling bill, which to me, and again, this is only one part, this doesn't sound crazy. So once again, school districts would be required to tell the education commissioner and DCF, the Department of Children and Families, whether a student is being pulled for homeschooling, going to a private school, or moving towns. DCF, Department of Children and Families, under this bill, would then be required to check whether that child was ever or is receiving protective services from the department or was previously under an order of supervision. So again, you see how this would work. The parent or the guardian tells local school officials, I'm pulling my child out, I'm going to homeschool them. The local school officials would then tell the State Department of Education and the Department of Children and Families, hey, they're pulling this kid out, and DCF would then go back and check in their files, because remember, after both of these, the unidentified young man and the Mimi Torres case, it took us days or weeks to find out whether or not DCF had any previous or open or active files on these cases. So again, DCF would be required to check whether or not the child was getting protective services from the department or was under an order of protective supervision. If the child is under DCF supervision, DCF must include a note in the child's case file. Now, that's what I'm reading here in the Connecticut Insider, the Hearst version of this. And again, I do have a downloaded PDF, a copy of the bill that I'm pawing my way through with some help here. That doesn't sound crazy. Now, there is a quote after that. I have no idea who this woman is. Olivia Tumerscheidt, a former homeschooler who now attends the Connecticut State Capitol and came to the public hearing with her family. Quote, I think it puts undue suspicion on the parents who withdraw their kids from school. It treats them as inherently suspicious instead of probably innocent. All right. But isn't a healthy amount of suspicion a good thing? Wouldn't we rather be inherently a little bit, just a skosh? Just a pinch between your cheek and gum, like Walt Garrison used to say. Just a little bitty, a little bit, suspicious here and that. Oh, okay, you're leaving town, you're going to a different school, or you're being homeschooled, whatever. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Once again, should Connecticut have tighter requirements and regulations just to inform state officials when a child begins any form of homeschooling? Here's a guy who was no stranger to very emotional debates on things like this. Chris Caruso joins us. Chris, how are you, sir?
Good, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
I wanted to get your opinion, Chris, on the vetoes by Governor Ned Lamont, who has kind of raised the ire of his party a little bit. It's a few million dollars worth of earmarks, and he said, listen, I want a better process here. What do you think? Surprised or not?
No, I think he's had the courage many times to do the right thing. It's never easy to go against your party, especially the legislature, because he depends on their support. But in this particular issue, I think he was right. And, you know, as I mentioned last week, Paul, earmarks are nothing new to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is they're not synonymous with only Democrats. Republicans have earmarks, too.
Sure.
But it's an election year. It's a little crazy time. So people are raising these issues. In some cases, both Democrats and Republicans vote against the earmarks, but when they get into their district, they're there with the ribbon cutting. So, you know, and right? They're there with the ribbon cutting, or they're taking the selfies and all that stuff. And that's, right? And you know, it's kind of disingenuous, but it does go on.
Yeah.
And I think in this particular case, I think he was right to do it. He's also introduced legislation that the earmarks would be looked at. They'd be properly vetted to make sure the organizations are in proper standing with the state to do vetting of those organizations. So I think it's right. You know, I think Speaker Ritter said it best that, you know, okay, the governor put a pause on this, and now we've got to do the necessary work in order to get his support. And I think that's fine. You know, there were Bridgeport projects that were earmarked in this legislation. And one in particular, I won't mention names, but, you know, very well-respected, very well-regarded, very properly managed and operated. But, you know, if you put a pause, it has to go to everyone, not just one community over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And there were enough questions to put it on hold. And, you know, for those who criticize the governor and say a lot of things about him, again, it's election year, he's willing to make the right choices when they're needed. And I think this was one of them, Paul.
And Chris, as I think you pointed out to me and other people have, you know, people say, well, where does all this money go? I think you or somebody pointed out to me that the reason these earmarks are so popular is that these smaller organizations, many of whom use volunteers, yes, they have paid people, but that's for their overhead. Their current structure, assuming everything's on the up and up, Chris, they can get this stuff done much cheaper than hiring thousands of more state employees.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Paul. You know, the state has, you know, many, many organizations out there that do the work that the state would do. And as you stated, it would cost much more for the state with salaries, with benefits, all of those type of needs and demands. So in many ways, these nonprofit organizations are carrying out the work of government in a different, probably more efficient and less expensive way.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a positive to it. I just think, in fairness, though, the earmark system needs to be monitored. There has to be a proper vetting because it does involve public funds, taxpayer money. So that all has to be reviewed. And putting it in that emergency bill, I don't think was the wisest thing to do. You know, so in turn, I give the governor credit. not the first time he's vetoed something against the interests of his party, but I think he's fair and objective when he needs to be on a lot of different issues. And on top of it, as I mentioned, he's introduced legislation in order to do the proper vetting in the future of earmarks. And I think that's the course to take. And I just, you know, that's the right way. An open and transparent process is always going to bode well for taxpayers when that's done.
Yeah, and Chris, finally, just to wrap up here, you're right. And I read the, and it was a relatively short bill. The governor said, hey, for the future, A, B, and C, no matter what party. And the stuff he had in that legislation, you probably read it because it was so brief. Well, geez, what's the name of the organization? What is their mission statement? Who is actually running the thing? And what accountability is there going to be for whatever projects they do if we give them this money? It sounds like, Dr. Common Sense to me, Chris.
No, it really is, Paul. And, you know, don't forget nonprofits. In many cases, are 501c3s. So they receive tax-exempt status from the federal government as well as the state. So, you know, you've got to make sure those organizations are properly vetted. They're properly documented with the state. The funding is going to go to the mission of that organization. And it's the right thing to do, because if they don't do that, there's going to be audits. In some cases, we've seen it already. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be accusations made and possible criminal, involvement. So I think it's the right thing to do. And I applaud the governor on his legislation. I applaud him on this one. And for anyone who stands out there, and there are on social media, that the governor is a left-wing, you know, cuckoo and he's corrupt and all this stuff, you're not going to get a fairer approach than you get with this guy. I'm going to tell you, he calls it right down the middle. He's more of a moderate. He has supported his party, you know, different factions within the party. But I think he does it in a measured way. And when the party goes too far, or, you know, his members go too far, he's willing to pull back and say, let's wait and consider it. Not an easy thing, because the legislature by big majorities control the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. And but he's willing to take that step. Now, you're not going to hear that from, again, those Republicans, those Democrats that are going to benefit from the earmarks, but it's the right thing for him to do. I believe that, and I think he's done the right thing with this, Paul.
All right, Chris Caruso. Chris, thank you as always. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat next week, my friend. Take care.
Okay, take care, Paul.
All right, Chris Caruso there. And joining us, as he does every Thursday at this time, former Republican State Senate leader John McKinney. You see him give his opinions and takes with our buddy Tom Dudchick and the whole panel every Sunday at 10 a.m. on the Capitol Report on WTNH, our friends at News 8. Hey, John, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Good, John. And we got a little reminder a few days ago, because I know when it was tried on the federal level, it was a no-go, but Connecticut does have a line item veto. It happens so rarely. It's news, John. I think when it does happen, and Governor Lamont, much to the chagrin of some people in his own party, A, he did that, and B, he explained why.
Yeah, he did. And I think Governor Rell was the last to try to use a line item veto on a bill that she didn't sign, so it wasn't allowed. It is very rarely used. The governor was right to use it, as you know. There's been a real lack of transparency around these earmarks, and that's really what needs to change. The governor's got a bill. The Republicans have been pushing a lot of bills, good bills, on earmark reforms, and I think the governor wants to get those reforms in place before he starts giving out money to these earmarks.
And John, listen, for the years you were in the legislature, talk to my audience about what it's like to, with all good intentions, to have numerous organizations, good nonprofits, who get great jobs done in the community at far less than it would cost the state to do. But I would imagine to many state legislators, and I guess you went through this, the requests on this stuff must be constant.
They are. And, you know, let me first just say, you know, my last session was 2014. Yeah. The use of earmarks has exploded since I left.
Really?
But, you know, when I was there, I would meet with nonprofits and I would really go through a process of, you know, what's more important than others. You're not going to get everything you want. So, mm-hmm. for example, one year I was able to get about $350,000 for Operation Hope in Fairfield, which provides housing for the homeless and other services, a food pantry and the like. Mm-hmm. I also got grants for our local police department and fire department so they could get equipment that wasn't in the town budget. But at the end of the day, as a legislator, you're kind of the one who's making the decision which one of these nonprofits is more worthy, which one can you get passed and get support from other legislators. And then it becomes a very political process, mm-hmm. Paul. It's not a competitive process. There isn't a lot of vetting going on. I always thought I had to do the vetting to make sure because my name was going to be yeah. on the earmark. And, you know, and for the governor, any governor, if something happens and we know there's a state senator from Hartford who's under investigation for misuse of earmarks, that it's the governor who's going to take the blame. So I think these reforms are long overdue. And just one other thing,
sure.
Paul, which really exploded is not just the use of earmarks, but the use of earmarks where a couple of million dollars will go to one nonprofit and then they will resend oh. out part of that money to other nonprofits and the state has no idea who they are. And that has to be part of the reforms.
And John, I like what the governor did. He said, listen, we'll begin this all again, but here's what I want to see. And he put out a little bit of a laundry list and I read it over twice, John. Didn't seem to me like anything crazy. Did you think that or not?
No, I don't think it's crazy. In fact, I think it doesn't go far enough. I think there should be some type of a board or team put mm-hmm. together that's going to review these earmarks. If you're a nonprofit, if you're a 501c3, you ought to look at the 990s. You ought to look at, you know, how much do they spend towards their mission versus how much do they spend towards their administration? You know, if they're, you know, getting $10 million and $9 million going to administration and only one's going to their mission, that yeah. to me isn't really a great nonprofit. That's just an example. So I think they could even go farther in terms of really doing an application process, reviewing all the paperwork from all of these nonprofits, and then making decisions, some of which are political and some of which are meritorious, mm-hmm. as to which ones are most deserving.
And John McKinney, final question here. I know some of the folks on the Republican side have said, okay, let's build off of this even more, and the state should have an honest-to-goodness office of a state-level inspector general who can actually act on stuff when all these commissions and reports are done. Would you be in favor of that?
Well, Paul, not only am I in favor of it, I was the first one to introduce the idea of a state-level inspector general in 2001.
Wow.
I spent a lot of my political capital trying to get it passed, giving real subpoena power to an investigator who can look at waste, fraud, and abuse in state government. I couldn't get a lot of Democrats on board. Mm. And quite frankly, I couldn't get either a Republican or a Democratic governor on
wow.
board. So I would love to see Governor Lamont latch onto that. They did pass an inspector general for state police to look at when there are police shootings. But it's something that is long overdue. It's been very helpful for the federal government to look out for waste, fraud, and abuse, and there's no reason why it wouldn't work here in Connecticut.
And, John, finally, I mean, if they ever pass it, I hope they invite you up there so you can look at them in the face and go, finally, geez, what took you so
long? Finally, what took you so long? Yeah, I had to leave for you guys to pass my idea. I guess that's it.
All right, check out John with our friends, including Tom Dudchick, this coming Sunday morning at 10, the Capitol Report with our friends at News 8. Hey, John, thanks. Have a happy weekend. We appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go.